Welcome back to the Arnold Podcast. I am now joined by Ryan Rebalkin, the actual CEO of our network. He is here with me with Doug Greenberg, as always. Welcome, Ryan.
I watched Commando, and I specifically watched it again like the last 12 hours. And I usually try to watch the movies like within a day of recording, so it's fresh in my mind.
Oh, that's a good recommendation for anyone. Just watch Commando within 12 hours of your life, every day. I certainly feel better. This is one of my favorite Arnold movies.
Everybody's favorite Arnold movies.
Yes, except Arnold himself.
Oh, he didn't like it.
He doesn't like this?
Okay, so I have his autobiography.
Oh.
And if you turn the page to where Red Sonja discussion on ends and where Commando should begin, he starts talking about his wedding.
Okay.
He devotes like maybe 3 or 4 sentences to Commando, and that's basically, yeah, I met this guy named D'Souza, and he helped me with the one-liners and the quips and everything, and it was great. And then I got married, and he starts talking about marrying the Kennedy woman. Because here's the thing, Commando was a last-minute thing, because 20th Century Fox was paying for the distribution rights, but they had no movie to distribute. So they were in a bind. They just rushed this script, and they got Arnold on board, because that's another thing. Originally, it was going to be Gene Simmons playing John Matrix. Not Think bad. About that one.
That's yeah. a movie I'd yeah. love to see. At least the soundtrack would be better. Are we talking about the soundtrack?
Okay, so you're telling me that Kiss would be better than the James Horner soundtrack? That quintessential soundtrack that just reminds you of Commando immediately?
No, here's the thing. I'll be honest with you. I don't want to come in. This is an Arnold podcast. So I'm not going to trash. I trash Stallone.
You can
films.
Say anything you want. Well, you can deal with it.
Well, I know. You're a big boy. I know that. I love Arnold, and I love his films. Like, he's fun. Like, I always enjoy Arnold. Like, at the end of the day, he's fun to watch, and he's got that big screen presence, lots of charisma. He's kind of funny. I love the way he talks. All those things that he was criticized for in his early days, that's what I love about him. He's very endearing. I love his accent. I love his voice. I just love everything about him, like, in the sense of he's very fun and easy to watch. However, watching Commando again for – it's not a movie I've seen 100 times. This is probably watching it objectively in 2022 and just trying to just watch it as a fun action film, even knowing it's from the 80s. It's just not a very good film.
Like, I vehemently disagree.
I know you do, and that's fine. I know a lot of critics and even comments on the internet, you know, they had, because First Blood Part 2 got released the same year. And so there's obviously some comparisons. I mean, Sly and Arnold.
This was a direct reaction to the success of First Blood 2.
Which I find odd that they would be so quick. Why didn't they give it a little bit more time? Like, why not release?
They needed the movie now, Ryan. They needed it now, yesterday.
Okay.
They had a distribution net to fill. And they just needed a movie. And First Blood was hot. So they figured, hey, we have a script that's sort of like it. Let's do another one. If we could get Arnold, this could work. So they put $10 million into this project. They got Arnold, who got $1.5 million, which he was really happy with, because Arnold had this thing about he wanted to double his salary every movie he made. It almost worked too. But he got $1.5 million for this, which was a big, big, big step up for him.
Oh, yeah. He hadn't really done anything before this that was of huge box office note.
Oh, just Terminator and Conan the Barbarian.
Other than Terminator,
Conan
this
the
is
Destroyer.
Stop it. No. Those movies didn't do necessarily that great.
Yes, they did.
They didn't showcase Arnold as a very good, like, this was his first true, I'm the hero, I'm...
Oh, in that sense, in a classic action hero kind of way.
Yeah,
because
this was
sort of a bad guy in the other movies, basically.
Yeah, it was
He's a Conan the Barbarian, and he's a robot, a killer robot
right.
in Terminator. So, basically, when we get to Commando, we have the classic hero.
I think that's what I meant to say was, yes, he did the Conan films, yes, and of course he's the hero there. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I was under the impression the Conan films, upon release, I know they're cult favorites, I know they're fan favorites, I know they're very popular, but were they box office, like topped the box office when they were released?
Yes.
Like, they did? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Conan was number one, Terminator was number one.
Well, Terminator, stop saying Terminator, I know Terminator, James Cameron's Terminator. But he was the bad guy in this. Then that was like 84 was it? Or 84 was mm-hmm. So this was his first, like,
he was the guy who sold the movie. He's on the poster. He's the marquee name, right? So it was his vehicle. Just like, and that's another thing. That's one of the reasons why we're covering Commando this early. Commando brought him to the next level, not just in terms of paycheck, but also in terms of acting. Because in Conan the Barbarian, he barely acts, of course. It's mostly an action movie. Right. And then with Terminator, he acts like a robot.
Yeah.
So here he's actually emoting, and he has a family, and he has dialogue, long dialogue in some cases. And that's what makes it so interesting to talk about, because this was a pivotal point for Arnold.
Yeah.
Because the studio was really scrutinizing him, and they were very, very worried that this Austrian guy with a thick accent could even act, could even carry a sentence. So at some point they just said, why don't you just write more one-liners? Because this dialogue he has to carry, because he really couldn't remember all the lines. There's the one scene in the, the shopping mall, where he has to explain to Cindy what he wants from her. It's like, okay, you have to go over to Sully, and you have to do this, that, the other. And he couldn't remember all that. That scene had to be shot and shot and reshot, and another take and another take and another take, because he just couldn't do it. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why Ray Don Chong was cast, is because she could work so well with him, because she's a well-trained traditional actress. And so she carried the scenes and guided and reacted to Schwarzenegger, where Schwarzenegger just had to do his thing.
She was basically the comic relief, wasn't she?
And she was the comic relief. She was funny.
Yeah, she had all like the humor lines. Do you know how long was the shoot actually? Do you know?
It was really quick. I think it was like 6-7 weeks.
And that's like Ryan before said that this is not a very good film. It seems like they crammed a lot. They didn't do a whole lot of extra takes because some of the the action set pieces were great, but some of the acting scenes were, another couple of takes might have tightened those up a little bit.
That's true. That's one of the problems. It's because this movie was rushed, and it wasn't rushed by the director. It was rushed by the studio. They said they pushed, and they were actually editing while principal photography was going on. And that's in a unique situation, because it actually changed the look of the film. Because at some point, the editor chimed in to the director and the producers like, hey, we need more close-ups of Arnold. So that's why in the latter part of the movie, you get a lot more close-ups of Arnold himself. And that really changed the whole perception of the film.
Right.
And it's actually a minor miracle that it came off as good as it did. I think because the director was very good at thinking on his feet, and Joel Silver is just an excellent producer, who actually took over production duties and started building the sets himself. There's like the hotel scene where the fight with Cook takes place. Silver built that himself. There was no hotel. It's an entire soundstage.
That was one of the scenes that came to mind, because that fight between Bill Duke and Arnold looked a little slow, stunted, close quarters, and it shows.
Yeah.
And I saw that Ray Don Chong went in later to dub like the commentary lines that she had during it.
The ad-libs,
to add a little humor to that scene.
Right. And
or to add a little something extra.
One of the reasons it's a little clunky, because I agree it's a little clunky, it's because Bill Duke did the fighting himself. He did the actual stunt. That's Bill Duke getting tossed around, and he was like, at the end of the day, he was probably a little worse for wear. And sorry, he said, well, I'll do it myself. I'm a man.
Did we watch the same film? Okay.
We're doing Commando, right?
Commando. I hope you didn't see like the porn version of it.
No, it's...
Because I did send you a bunch of Ray Don Chong links.
No, I Googled her.
She's all over the internet, of course. So maybe you just clicked on the wrong one. I don't know. Was there a lot of group things happening in yours?
No, I mean, okay, so I think this film for me, I don't know what it is. There's like I said, there's the fun part of me that watched it for the fun. So maybe that's where you guys are focusing on, and maybe a lot of Commando
that's
fans.
The whole thing, it's fun.
No,
it's supposed to be fun.
I get it. Don't get me wrong, I get it. But
it's not a serious movie. It's not serious as a heart attack like Rambo is.
Well, no, and I don't need every action movie to be serious, but maybe. I think I would have enjoyed it more had it had more of the serious vein. I don't get the comedy. I don't think it was funny at any point. I don't think Ray Don Chong was funny. No, I don't think I didn't laugh once. I found her whole performance grating. I found everything she said irritating. I found her character to be pointless. I didn't understand why she was a flight stewardess turned James Bond agent. I didn't understand the whole, everything that, like Commando didn't need, or sorry, John Matrix. What a name. John Matrix didn't even need this girl. Like, why did he need her? Like, we could see what he could do on his own anyways. I'm trying to, like, enjoy the film, absolutely. I know it's silly. So if you let go of, like, the whys, but every scene that happened, I asked myself, why is this happening? Like, why are they doing it this way? Why are the events happening in this fashion? Like, there's, I, you know, and I'm just telling you, you can look at me all you want, disconcertingly.
The plot, for people who haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, let's talk about the plot for sure.
Yeah, it's about, well, the plot. It's not much of a plot, but originally, the story that was written was about an Israeli commando who had sworn off violence and had sworn off war, and he's pulled back into the whole situation because his daughter is kidnapped for the reasons in the film. They rewrote it for Arnold, of course. So here you now have a superhero who is caught off guard and his daughter is kidnapped. And one of the reasons is he's more or less a superhero and has like a disproportionate strength, etc., is because the writer, Loeb, is currently the president of Marvel, and he wrote comic books, big ones. He wrote Batman, he wrote for Spider-Man, he wrote for Buffy. The weird plot is basically because you're watching a comic book movie. That's the sensibility. So you don't watch it as, well, here we have John Rambo, and he's traumatized, and he's this, that, the other.
Okay, stop bringing up Rambo. Okay, talk about Commando. Look, I want to make this clear, because I knew Rambo would come up.
Yeah, that's why we're bringing you in, because you're the Rambo guy.
No, I'm not Rambo nothing. What I mean is like, I know that this was, quote-unquote, a knee-jerk reaction to the Rambo success. I understand that. But I could easily watch any film by Arnold and by Sly, and I never compare the two. I hate it that you're doing this, but the public does this all the time. They did it back then. It's like saying Pepsi or Coke, right? Like, which one's better? I actually enjoy both. You give me a Pepsi, I'll enjoy a Pepsi. You give me Coke, I'll enjoy a Coke. I'm just talking strictly about this film. I wish Arnold and I wish the director made this more serious. That's all. The comic relief wasn't funny. So
does Arnold.
Perfect. I'm on board with Arnold. Okay.
In fact, there's a scene at the pinnacle of the movie where he is wounded and he hides in a shack. The soldiers chasing him pepper the shack with bullets. He comes out and slaughters everyone.
That's great. That's probably one of the highlight sequences, yeah.
Certainly. And so he chops off the arm of one of the men. Arnold wanted to grab the arm and slap the guy in the face with it, saying, why don't I give you a hand?
I love it.
That's Arnold.
You know, I think this is the difference in directors, let's say, because what John McTiernan got out of that cast in Predator, which we'll be talking about in a couple of months.
Yeah, did you invite me onto that one? Am I coming on that one? That's one of the best action films of all time, hands down.
Well, you haven't been on your best behavior, Ryan.
I'm actually not trying to be antagonist. I'm really not. I think that – sorry, Doug, I don't want me to step on you, but – regarding Predator, when I was watching this, my back of my mind, I was like, Predator is just like a year and a half away, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was just, so that's what you're about to say, and I'll let you finish there, Doug. Sorry, just that, yeah, John nailed the characters, the tone, the action, and there was comedy, and there's like funny moments in Predator. Anyways, go ahead.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say is like it does have some comedy moments, like the fuck, what's
stick around.
The director, the other, the screenwriter, that's the dorky guy with the glasses.
Yeah. Shane Black.
Like, I mean, telling the jokes to the Indian guy. Like, I mean,
he wrote Lethal Weapon. Yeah, he wrote Lethal Weapon.
It's funny too because I've seen Predator like 10 times as much as I've seen Commando, and I'm blanking on everything right now, but that movie is handled so much differently, and it's so much better.
Predator is a superior movie in every way.
Yeah, however, and I don't mean to tear this movie down. I love Commando for what it is.
You can't, because this was critically acclaimed. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding you. It there were critics who basically buried Rambo First Blood Part 2 for obvious reasons, because that movie is ludicrous. But they praised this movie because it found the right balance between violence and comedy. Because it's
Yeah, but that's not what... Okay, well, so we're going to bring up Rambo. And I'm not defending Rambo because I'm the Sly guy. It's just, like, again,
well,
Sly...
It's inevitable because this film basically is a cash-in on the success of Rambo.
Sure,
it's
that's
Arnold
fair.
It's Arnold doing Rambo.
But why would they say that it's a better film because they balance the comedy? I don't understand that reasoning. If that's what you're looking for, then, yeah, Rambo never was intended to have a comedic... balance. It's a guy rescuing prisoners of war. It's a brutal film in many ways. Like, yes, it's over the top 80s action, which I love, and I love that about this film. But the balancing part, why is that a criticism against? Why is this a success compared to the Rambo film when Rambo was never about that tone? Is what I'm
getting. However, in Rambo 3, here come the jokes.
Yeah, well, that's a discussion for Rambo 3. But this came. This is the response to Rambo 2, though.
Yes, it is. And the direct reaction of the Rambo franchise is, let's be more like Commando. Let's be more like Predator.
Well, I don't
let's
know if I've seen that.
Let's put jokes in there.
Well, that's, it didn't work.
It's not fair to compare.
I think because Arnold is funny and Stallone rarely is.
No, he's not that kind of
funny. The reason why I keep bringing this up is there is a direct and very powerful rivalry going on between Arnold and Stallone. They hate each other at this point.
Is this what started that?
Yeah.
I think so. It started earlier. Yeah.
But this is basically Arnold nipping at Stallone's heels, right? Stallone is the king of the box office. Stallone is a Hollywood god. And Arnold wants to be on top. And he will do anything and everything to take Stallone down.
And at some point, it became a game to Arnold, but Stallone took it very, very seriously.
Yep. Very seriously. Let's bring up Brigitte Nielsen.
Oh,
Brigitte
sure.
Nielsen was actually supposed to co-star in this movie. But of course, Arnold had already co-starred with her in Red Sonja.
Right.
Arnold had a habit of, turning his co-stars into his playmates. So Brigitte Nielsen was Arnold's playmate during Red Sonja. And he broke it off. He'd just broken off his relationship with her because he wanted to get married. Then they brought up, we could bring in Brigitte Nielsen as your love interest. So they had to scramble to get another actress, and they actually looked at 20 other actresses. Everybody said no. And hence, they brought in Rae Dawn Chong. And that's why she's not a love interest. That's why she's comic relief.
A production like this, you would get thousands of people that come out to...
Yes, but Arnold wasn't a big star yet. Nobody wanted to work with that guy yet. Mm. After the success, of course, but not now. Arnold was just the new guy. Everybody's like, I don't know. I don't want to be Conan's girlfriend.
Right. That's fair. So he's a daddy.
Yes.
That's what this is all about. He's a daddy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. John Matrix is Papa. And he's daddy to Alyssa Milano, who we all know from Who's the Boss and that witch show. And she has a very, toxic Twitter feed. So here she's 12 or something.
12
this is
or
like
13.
Her first major movie.
Yeah. She already done a season of Who's the Boss at this point. So she was on TV.
Yes. And she was an experienced actress. And I think she handles herself well as Schwarzenegger's daughter. She's not annoying. She's actually believable in terms of that she can actually find ways of escape. You would think that when you're the daughter of an experienced commando, he would teach her some stuff, right?
Right.
So, I didn't mind it at all. Usually I'm abhorrent of child actors. I hit their guts. But in this case, Alyssa Milano was fine. She did really
She's
well.
She's fine as an actress. But we're not going to talk about the 80s comedy sitcom intro between him and his daughter montage.
with the ice cream and feeding the deer and everything.
I was like, what world are they living in?
What's happening here?
Yeah.
It's all in the opening credits. It's all to the James Horner soundtrack. And half of that is basically Arnold walking around with a chainsaw and axes and a tree trunk on his shoulder. So it's also to establish him as a big dude who's taking care of the ranch. Right.
Look at me. I'm the tough guy, but I'm so sweet and tender with my daughter. And I get that juxtaposition.
Well, they're establishing the father-daughter relationship and how important she is.
Oh, they're establishing all right, almost to the edge of creepiness. There was the way he was, I don't know, I have a daughter, and when she's 12 or 13, I will not be carrying her. She will not be jumping up in my arms and wrapping her legs around me, walking around town. I just found their whole, interplay. I wouldn't say inappropriate, but I was just she's 12, 13. I don't know. I found it kind of just like, are you, do you love your daughter there, Arnie, or are you in love with her? Like,
it's,
it was,
and well, she didn't react to Arnold that way.
Was she supposed
especially
to play younger?
That time. Yeah, but maybe. I mean, I've seen footage of Arnold working with like mentally handicapped children. They react to him that way.
I'm not saying he was being inappropriate, just looked weird. Like,
yeah, but if I agree. But if you look at like the making of Kindergarten Cop, he's just throwing those kids around the classroom for fun, and they're all giggling and happy. And so basically, it's innocent, but because, you know, we've all heard what happens on Epstein's Island, etc. We're all basically traumatized.
I'm saying Arnold, I know, was completely innocent as Arnold, but I'm saying the character and the filming of the character and the daughter with the, what we saw on screen was just weird to me. As speaking as a father of a daughter, I would just wouldn't act this way with my daughter. It's just weird.
What if she was supposed to play younger? You know, she's a 12 or 13 year old actress, but maybe she's supposed to be playing.
Maybe she's like 8 or 9 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that might change things a bit. And I think, us not hating her character is the fact that she's used very sparingly. Her scenes are short. She doesn't have like a ton of like dramatic dialogue. Right. And I think they used her correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. She even tells off Arius and Bennett. You know, it's like, won't that be nice to be reunited with your daddy? And she goes, well, not nearly as nice as watching him smash your face in. It's like, yeah.
All right, so yeah,
the daughter I want
to
have.
So yeah, Alyssa Milano, yeah, she obviously went on to great stardom. She is weird now. I know. I don't understand her politics and stuff. That's fine. More power to her. But I will say, during the 90s, when she was like a young adult and her early 20s and what have you, she was one of the first female celebrities I Googled topless. You know, I was like, oh, I want to see what her. She did a couple of topless movies. I think one was called like Vampire Kiss or something about the van. I don't know what it was, but she had.
And you wanted to see how little Sam from Who's the Boss?
Sure, absolutely. Out, huh? And yeah, not disappointed.
Arnold is the pervert.
Yeah. Well, hey, she's an adult. It doesn't matter, you know. And I will say, she's a gorgeous girl. She's a gorgeous, gorgeous woman. We're the same age, so I was just Googling somebody my age at the time, and yeah. That was back when the internet was like first new, and you're like, you know, you could Google every actress. What movie they have taken their top off on. And yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. I was like, yeah, Alyssa Milano. Yeah, she was cute.
I did that with Ray Don Chong, though.
I would say Alyssa Milano's prettier. Not in this film, but in later years.
I mean, Jabber disagrees.
When I was a young lad myself watching Who's the Boss, Alyssa Milano was when I really started to, you know, her... rolling there was when I started to notice women.
Yeah, so we're the same age. Yeah, we're the same. You're a little bit older, Seiko, but yeah, I'm the same age as Doug, I think.
But she was the prettiest girl on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I think every young boy was like, yeah, had a schoolyard crush on Alyssa Milano for sure. Yeah.
Pretty much. There's not much to the plot. The daughter gets kidnapped by the former dictator of
Valverde.
Latin American country, Valverde, which is interesting because Valverde is also mentioned in Die Hard, and it's actually the country they go to in Predator. That's the jungle of Valverde. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and isn't it also in Expendables? Isn't that the...
No, that's Villena.
Yeah.
Maybe that's like a shitty Caribbean island off the coast of Valverde. It could be.
Now, so the plot is basically they kidnap... his daughter to force him to kill a political figure. So they're like, if you want to see your daughter again, kill this president or whatever of this country.
President Velasquez.
Okay, so my question is, why didn't they just do it?
Because Arnold, as the hero of the revolution, had a very, very close relationship to this politician and could get close to him.
Oh, so he could just walk up and just like...
Yeah, all right, fair enough. You know, he could just call up and say, hey, I'm coming over to have dinner. And then just, you know, shoot him in the head. Yeah, it's probably what they wanted because they wanted to commit a coup d'etat. You know, the whole thing isn't really thought out, but there's probably a reason why they have a warehouse full of military hardware and they're training all these guys on that island. And because it's partially, I think, an invasion and partially a quick coup d'etat.
So,
and it's a good, if you want to take over a country, it's always smart to kill their leader.
Sure. Okay, I that's fair. I forgot about the friendship part. I missed that. Settled. Yes. Okay.
In the director's cut of the movie that I watched, there is very few scenes added, but one scene is lengthened, and that's actually interesting and important because he's in the car with Cindy and he's showing a picture of his daughter, because this is actually the reason why he kidnapped Cindy and why they're doing this and why they're chasing Sully and Cook, etc. And so he also explains about his past, that he was a sort of in the military but worked but did black ops and did all kinds of shady stuff, and that made him miss his entire daughter's childhood. He wasn't there for the measles. He wasn't there for this, that, the other.
That's fair. So that adds a little bit more to maybe why he's cramming all these activities at the beginning of the film, because he's missed a lot of the early days. Okay, yeah. Well, that explains a little bit of that montage of feeding deer and having ice cream fights. Okay, all right, fair
enough. Don't you feed deer with your children, Ryan?
No. Well, the deer they're not domesticated like that. They run away. You go up to them. They don't just eat out of your hand.
Maybe elk. You guys have elk up there in Canada, right?
Yeah, but elk, moose, deer, yeah.
Polar bears.
Don't you feed those with your children?
Yes, all the time. They're just out the door waiting for the daily feedings.
See, you love your children just as much as Arnold or John Matrix loves his
If my
daughter.
Kid put ice cream on my face, I'd be like, what are you doing? What kind of nonsense is this? He's just laughing like it's the greatest thing in the world. Doug, would you like to have one of your boys smush ice cream in your face? Would you just get a kick out of that? Wouldn't that be just so much fun?
That would probably make me angry.
Yeah, it's the reason why I don't have children, really.
Good reason. You never know when you're going to get attacked by food. But okay, so I did want to say though, why were this isn't a criticism, this is a question. So why were John Matrix counterparts all killed before the kidnapping of the daughter?
Okay, John Matrix's whereabouts are secret. He's in a protective witness kind of thing. So they need that general lead them to John Matrix. So they're killing off his team so that General will think, oh, shit, John is in danger. I have to warn him. And then, of course, he brings them right to them.
Okay.
Yeah, but how does he – they came in a helicopter. How did they follow him?
Who knows?
Yeah, I thought he – I didn't realize he was in any secret. I thought he just retired from the military and did his own hiding. I didn't realize that he had announced to anybody where he was. I thought he was off the grid completely.
Yeah, that was the point. They couldn't find him. So they needed General Kirby to betray his whereabouts.
Oh, I see. So they killed all the men to say, okay, gotcha. Okay, exactly. That's fair. Okay. I didn't see the movie had bad plots. There actually was the biggest plot hole for me was actually the Ray Don Chong character. Honestly, that was the biggest plot. I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't enjoy the experience as much as I could have. I didn't because the movie actually didn't have too many, like we just discussed here. It's actually, those are reasonable. Everything we discuss are reasonable things that have happened so far within the action film genre of the character and the reasons why people are doing what they're doing. But I think the introduction of the flight stewardess and then her whole actions and what she adds to the movie as far as the, you know, how is John Matrix going to, you know, do what he's going to do. I didn't think she was necessary. I would assume John can fly a plane. I'm assuming everything he did at the end didn't have to do anything with Ray Don Chong's character. That's all. I think she was the biggest flaw. I think if she didn't exist in the film, I probably would have liked a lot more.
Well, maybe. But if she didn't exist in the film, if Ray Don Chong hadn't helped Arnold act in this movie, there would be no Commando and you wouldn't enjoy this movie.
You know who she reminded me? You know who she, yeah, fair. But you know who she reminded me of? And maybe this is why I was off. Temple of Doom.
Sure.
Kate Capshaw. This reminded me of a Kate Capshaw experience where you got Harrison Ford, who's an incredible actor, incredible screen charisma. You don't need this. Like, you don't need to have a Kate Capshaw for an indie film.
Okay, so your problem with Ray Don Chong isn't so much the actress. It's really the contrivance of the character.
Yeah, I think it's part
because
of it. But also
the character in the way she becomes a problem. They have to hamstring him to make it more difficult, because this movie is about time constraint, right? Remember, the producer of this movie is Joel Silver. He made 48 hours and another 48 hours. So he loved movies with time constraints. So here you have beep, beep, beep on the watch. We have 11 hours to complete this mission or the daughter's dead. And here he needs Cindy for basically to get to Sully.
Okay.
And she's just sort of strung along, and he could have dumped her at some point, but because she becomes helpful and convenient, he just tags along. But he doesn't actually bring her to the island, because that's where he doesn't need her anymore.
They always have, in these movies, always have like a female counterpart to the hero. Like you said, Willie Scott, the the local girl in
Every
Predator.
James Bond movie is full of them.
Yeah.
It creates extra tension.
It's usually like you said, a hindrance ego, but like or a damsel in distress kind of thing. Like he's always got to be saving her.
Right.
But Ray Dawn Chan was more of a like a partner, you know, except for the moment where she sold him out to the mall cops.
But, yeah, and I kind of disagree that she's not funny. I find her very funny. I find her reactions funny. Maybe not all of her lines, but her reactions are really good. Because she keeps like, I can't believe all this macho bullshit. And she has kind of this female perspective on all the stuff that's happening, which is not normal. It's a way of grounding this movie. It's like, yes, this is not typical behavior. Maybe for the movie, but not in normal life. Where a normal stewardess comes across this guy who's like kicking ass and taking names, and she's like, what the hell? Why are we doing this? And so he needs to explain. So you don't have a silent movie. You have someone explaining to someone else who's normal, sort of, well, this is what we're about to do.
Yeah.
And no, she complains about this. She's like, are you going to tell me what's going on or what? And he just says, no.
I guess humor, humor is subjective, of course. And I didn't laugh. That's all. I didn't chuckle.
Should we be worried about you?
No. Don't worry about me because I don't laugh at Ray Dawn Chong.
I'm getting a little worried here.
Can you imagine?
You don't know comedy, Ryan.
Can you imagine the comedic geniuses of Ray Dong Chong? Anyway, I don't know. I didn't even realize she's Chong. Tommy, is it Tommy Chong? Is that
yes?
And she was born in Canada,
Sharon and Charles Chong.
I'm surprised she was born in Canada.
Tommy Duo.
I don't know why how that happened. Yeah, she's born. She's a Canadian citizen.
The list of bad guys. You had David Patrick Kelly as Sully. Yeah, Bill Duke as the character.
The awesome Sully.
Bennett,
who does the greatest death rattle ever. Did you hear that?
That guy to me, he always was like a spooky little man in the movies that I seen. He was Luther in 48 Hours.
Warriors.
He was in that movie on the Dreamscape, I think it was called, on a train. Yes. And he was like a scary character in that. I mean, I saw it as a little kid, so anytime like I seen him, he always had like gave me like a creepy, spooky vibe.
Yeah, he's great at playing these smarmy, insane little bastards.
Yeah, he's a great bad guy.
I loved him in this movie, and he gets really good lines.
Yeah,
like at some point, Arnold is beating him up, and he just gives him lip. It's like, hey, fuck you. And he's like punching him. And it's like, I'll say it a little louder then. Get fucked.
My favorite is, Ryan, this is a callback to last night's recording. When she tells him to piss off and he goes, fucking whore. Like, yeah, she's a whore because she doesn't want to bang you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of which, this kind of talking about that kind of behavior. China, there's a video that just got released. This happened like last night. In a cafe, this guy was sexually like trying to grope a Chinese woman in some sort of restaurant, right? Just a normal like eatery, and he got denied the advances, and he was trying to grope her like at the table, and she pushed him back, and all five guys kicked the crap out of these girls outside, and it's all on camera, and. It just shows you, yeah. I mean, this kind of reminds me of just what this guy was saying. Like, how dare you not take my advances? This guy only name called Ray Dawn Chong in the film, but in real life today, we're still having these issues in China, of course.
And in this movie, when Sully is no longer necessary to the plot, because he isn't, because Arnold already has the keys to the hotel room, he reminds him of a promise he made. Like, remember, Sully, when I told you I'd kill you last? And he's holding him over the cliff.
Yeah, you did. You did, Matrix. You did.
Alive.
That's great. That's a great moment. Great moment, yeah.
Ever.
That was a good moment.
There's
Did you hear what he was screaming when he was falling down into the chasm?
Was it like, fuck you or something?
No.
I don't know what it was. I can't remember.
Ooh la la.
Was it?
What? He was screaming, ooh la la.
What? I thought it was like, fuck you.
It's like Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Those moments are great. Those are the fun moments in this film. And like, so I just want to make this clear, because I know there might be listeners of the Arnold podcast are like, who the hell is Ryan? Who does he think he is? I think for me, at the end of the day, there's two things that stuck out to me that just made me not enjoy it as much as I could have. And I wanted to enjoy it more than I wanted to enjoy it the way you guys were. And I think for me, what it was is get rid of the female character, or at least change her humor or make her more just straight woman, so to speak. Maybe not necessarily funny, but just helpful and maybe lighthearted, but not necessarily trying to be funny to make me laugh. I didn't like the soundtrack. I'm actually going to do a video edit of the, you know, when Arnold's getting himself all camouflaged up and his weapons going. I love those. I love those like 80 montage scenes of getting ramped up, ready to fight. But the musical score behind the musical bed behind that sequence is corny. It doesn't amp me up. You know, again, we're talking about Rambo, you know, but no, the Rambo soundtrack with Jerry Goldsmith, they're like, ju, 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 and that sound that, you know, when he's all getting, I love that kind of, I have it at the beginning of all my episodes, that score of the Rambo sound of just, it's angry and it's dark and it's menacing. I just wish they had the same type of score, not the same score, but more menacing. The
Caribbean cymbals.
That does not add to tension. Granted, it's the party time, sure, but it doesn't add to tension. Sorry, go ahead, Doug.
It's really typical for this movie. And what really took me out of it, in a sense, was when I watched 48 Hours later, and 48 Hours also has James Horner. And it's the same thing. So it's a James Horner thing.
That was I was going to reference 48 Hours, and I don't know why it's different. It's memorable for it's being different, but it's not your typical action movie score. And I don't think we ever see it again. It's like Caribbean steel drums behind like a orchestrated, composition.
I think it sounds really cool.
It's not. I don't dislike it the way Ryan does, but it's very noticeable. Like I think, like a score should kind of flow with the movie. If I'm noticing the score more than like what's on the screen, it's a little bit off-putting.
It's almost like the music is almost becoming a character.
Yeah, it had that kind of, it had the beat of, well, they're trying to make that lighthearted kind of score where, again, I can't help how I react to the film. Like, it's just how we react to anything. Our brains and our emotions or our DNA just is the way it is. I mean, there's people that love this film. Awesome. There's people that love films that I hate, and there's people that hate films that I love. Like, there's no way to control how one experiences something, but I definitely watch this with an open mind. I love Arnold. It's been a long time since I've seen this film, but maybe I was just shocked about, I thought it was more gritty. I think my remembrance might have been, this is a more gritty film than I remembered. It's probably been a little while maybe. So when I watched it, I was like, why is this comedy, so much comedy happening? So I guess I was off put by the comedy.
And fun.
Yeah. Well, I was surprised by it and it didn't impress
me. As he is killing people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sure. And the killing at the end, well, you know, the big fight sequence at the end, of course, where he mows down 108 people or whatever it is. I guess there's also a part of me where I never once felt any kind of tension or any kind of worry for John Matrix at all. It was very comical of like nothing hits him. I think he had a little scratch on the shoulder from something.
No, he gets shrapnel from a grenade.
Oh,
but for some reason, he after he comes out of the shed, it doesn't bother him ever again.
Right. So
and
I guess
he does get cut a little bit here and there when he's in the knife fight with Bennett.
Right. Yeah.
Also quickly heals as he's carrying. He's not bleeding to death when he's walking down the beach with his daughter on his arm. So
Bennett was gay, and I didn't know that. Was that supposed to be obvious in the film, or was that subtle?
I think it was obvious to me. And to a lot of people, but maybe not to everyone. It certainly wasn't to the director, or he's one of those Hollywood people who's in denial about everything.
No, but I knew he was wearing a funny, like, chainmail, Freddie Mercury, odd getup of whatever. But I didn't know if that was him actually legitimately trying to come across as, like, a village people, I'm gay look, or just this is 1980s bad costume look. And it wasn't until your notes that I realized that, oh, the character is in love with John Matrix. I didn't know that watching the film that he was actually in love with John.
Yeah, I found several interviews with the actor. who basically said that this was the motivation to his character. He never told this to the director, I think, or maybe he did, but they just chose to ignore it. But basically, you just thought, well, okay, we don't really have a backstory here. Why would my psychotic character be so angry? Well, maybe he just has a hard-on for killing him. Who would have a hard-on in this situation? It's like, well, he has to be maybe a jilted lover. It's like someone who's in love with Matrix and knows he can't have him. So if he can't have him, he must die.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's got a
because the guy is
already
psychotic, right? And that's why Arnold can goad him into a knife fight instead of being just shot in the head. It's like, you want to put the knife in me and mm-hmm. look me in the eye and see what's going on in there when you turn it. He's seducing him into this fight. And Bennett just gets turned on and it's like, let's have a knife fight. The knife is just symbolic for something else. It's great. It's so funny.
I thought that line reading was pretty homoerotic when he was doing it.
Definitely. It's on purpose. And Arnold is oblivious.
I was oblivious too.
Actually, Arnold had barely had any interaction. So when he got into scenes with him, that guy was really, really intense. And he was coming at him with the plastic knife. And Arnold was like, shit, he's going to kill me. he was actually, this guy's too intense. I can't do this anymore. Right? So it's like, that was a very interesting fight. Because here's a guy who's not as big as, well, they're the same size, but Arnold is like 10 times more muscular. He's just basically a big fatty. And
yeah, he's hulking.
So he has to have some way to be menacing. And the best way to be menacing is to be completely, completely off your rocker. And that's what he is. He's just insane.
With a dash of gay, apparently. Well, it's interesting that they use the homosexual angle, because that was obviously not very common for a major film back then, but it became common. Speaking of James Bond, which was it? Javier
Diamonds
Bardem?
Are Forever. Diamonds Are Forever.
No, okay, there was that one. I forgot about that. I was thinking of the Daniel Craig film. One of the characters was one of the baddies was gay and had a thing for Bond.
I have to admit something. I hate Daniel Craig, and I don't watch those James Bonds.
Okay. Well, there's one of the main baddies was – but I thought that was cool, too. I would say twist, but I like the idea that, some bad guys are gay, and they use that their own whatever their feelings on their protagonists in those situations. And so I like that spin. So kudos to the actor that played Bennett. What's his name again?
Vernon Wells.
That's right, Vernon Wells. So kudos to him. Was he gay in real life, or like I was just curious? Or
no.
Interesting. So he just wanted he just threw that in there.
He's a good actor.
So for 1985, that's very very cool of him to throw that backstory in. So kudos to him to make that backstory.
We did Mad Max together, and actually Vernon Wells is in that and in Mad Max 2, and he's gay in Mad Max 2.
Oh, he just
remember assless chaps.
He's on the spectrum, at least. Who knows?
Didn't he? He described his character as Freddie Mercury on steroids or something like that.
There you go.
So I mean,
Mercury is as gay as the night is long.
Yeah, one of the most famous gay characters, people.
Yeah, Freddie Mercury played one of the best gay characters ever. He was straight as they come, but his stage presence was just
very committed to his role, even died of it.
Method actor through and through.
Maybe Vernon Wells just wanted to break free.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe Bennett did too.
It wouldn't have been cool, en vogue that time for a big action star, like him to come out as gay. Maybe he was hiding something.
Yeah,
you never know. Well, but the rivalry with Matrix is kind of a sideshow, but essential to the plot, really. Right, because the main plot device is Arnold has to kill someone for Arius. And doesn't do it, and instead is actively working against them, trying to find where they are, and trying to find out where his daughter is. And that's why Bennett is there, because he could have just, have been paid to find and capture Matrix, and that would have been it. But no, he sticks around, because as he explains to Arius, once he's killed Velasquez, he's going to come after you. And the only thing standing between John Matrix and you is me. So that's, as a character, he's very well set up as a real antagonist to Schwarzenegger's character. So I think that worked really well.
I think he did a great job.
Yeah. He's probably one of the reasons this movie works. Because it's every hero needs a great antagonist. Yes, it's a good bad guy. And he's a great bad guy.
No, he's fun. He's fun to watch. Yeah, he was over the top, silly, eccentric, all the things that an 80s bad guy is. And definitely, yeah, when he's on screen, it's fun. It's just funny because he just looks so different than Arnold, who's just extremely... what's funny, too, about these guys, and speaking of... the gay connection is that we as, well, we're all three of us here are straight men, but it is kind of funny how it's aesthetically pleasing to look at Arnold as a man, you know, to see these, you know, incredible physique, these muscles, as an action star. It's the same when I watched wrestling as a kid, right? Like all of the guys were roided up and had these physiques. But if you saw a wrestler who wasn't quite as physique, you're like, oh, it's kind of who's this guy? Who does he think he is? He's not, you know, he doesn't have this Hulk Hogan type figure or Macho Man figure.
Anyone who is facing the Ultimate Warrior, you would think of as, well, the Ultimate Warrior is just going to eat this guy up.
Yeah, so yeah. I love that. Anyways, I just enjoy that the aesthetics of these muscle bound guys back in the 80s. That's what made it fun. You know, the Lundgrens and Stallones and Arnolds. You know, they're all these. It was, of course, the Die Hard films that kind of changed that image a little bit. That you didn't have to be.
Because Bruce has spaghetti arms.
What's that?
That's because Bruce has spaghetti arms.
Yeah, well, so does Vern Wells. But that's what I was going to say. It was just interesting, like watching this film. There was never a point for me as a watcher where I really believed that this guy had any chance against John Matrix. But we had to kind of suspend disbelief that they're both from the same special forces unit. You know, of course, you know he might not be as big as Arnold, but he can still fight. You know, it's just kind of silly when that moment happened. Say again?
Well, they actually allude to the fact that he was thrown out of the unit because he was too psychotic and violent and crazy.
Okay.
Right? He enjoyed killing a little too much. Right. That's actually a line from the movie.
That's right.
As I said, he's very well set up as a really insane character.
So, do you want to talk about the mall scene a little bit? I mean, sure. How many mall guards? Like, this mall, like, it is stacked like Fort Knox. I can't believe the force of, like...
I call this the Keystone Cop scene.
Those were all mall cops, weren't they?
Mall cops are not armed security either.
No, but at some point, the real cops also show up.
I missed that. I thought they were all mall cops at one point.
No, a real cop shows up, and he's about to shoot a Matrix, and Cindy bumps into him. And he rolls down the stairs. This is at this point, it's basically where Cindy joins Matrix's team. Before this, she was just sort of an unwilling, kidnapped person.
As she should have reacted. She reacted accordingly at the beginning. Like, yeah, this is a big man who's kidnapped me. I don't know who he is. She had every right to think he was insane. But then she's like, oh, he knocked over a police officer. I'm good to go.
Hey, I have a 7:30 advanced karate class, and I can help you.
I think she flipped when she saw Sully kill one of the cops. That she said, "Oh, maybe he's for real."
Yeah, they've never put anything into the motivation behind. But then again, it's just like in James Bond. It's all women in his movies fall for him immediately, or turn coat, or turn tail, or betray their country for him. So it's kind of that sensibility. It's like, well, okay, he's Arnold. I must help.
Well, there's no way that you can look at Arnold's character and say, oh, this is a good, well-meaning guy. I think your initial reaction is going to be, what a giant creep.
A monster.
Some line of bullshit. I know, exactly.
Yeah.
But this scene, the mall scene, was one of the scenes I was referring to before when I said a few extra takes could tighten things up a little bit.
This is basically where it turns into like the Batman show, where he's just punching everybody out.
And when they do, I hate the part when they do like the dog pile and then he gets up, you know, with this and all the cops go, they fly back like all in sync.
Right from the Hulk.
Oh, I hated that part.
On the other hand, it's kind of cute and fun.
Right? Well, okay.
I totally agree. There's a couple parts in this film. Was like, all right, yeah. Does John Matrix like have some sort of like mutant strength? It was weird. Like, I know he's strong. No, but that's where borderlines parody. And
this is where it's like a comic book character.
Okay,
that's the point of this movie. He's a comic book character.
It looked like a panel from a comic book for sure.
Right.
Look, I love this movie, but that part I can't. I ever since I was a kid, I was like, that looks so stupid.
It kills your suspension of disbelief, huh?
Yeah. Just that one part.
I don't know. My suspension of disbelief got killed the minute he ripped the seat out of the car.
Oh yeah, nothing
happened. There was a lot of scenes. There was a lot of scenes at the beginning for the first half where basically before the island where he just showed like Hulk like strength. It was like Hulk grab, Hulk smash, Hulk flip cars, Hulk.
Hold
human strength is established. I mean, he's
it's a showcase. They're showcasing how strong he is.
Yeah. And to a certain extent, that's also because the director had no concept of human strength, apparently, and thought that Arnold could do anything. Oh, you know, you see that phone booth? Just rip it out of the floor. Yeah. Arnold can do that once, maybe, but not for 20 takes.
Yeah.
With, right? Sully inside it.
Sully over the chasm. It's like they actually wanted him to do that. It's like, oh, can you hold him like that? And he's like, are you crazy? No, get a crane.
Yeah.
I'm not holding that guy for how many hours of – no, doesn't happen.
Yeah. He could have reached into the phone booth and pulled Sully out, but he had to rip the phone booth out of the ground.
Sure.
Yes. You have to rip it out. Just like when you need a car and there's a perfectly good car, but it's just fallen on his side, you just bump it up.
Push it over.
Lift it up, and it works just fine. In fact, when you drive off, there's no dents in it.
The dents are all fixed.
Dents are all magically fixed. Yeah. That's not just a car. That's Christine.
Yep.
It's like Dukes of Hazzard. After every jump, it's back to normal again. Yeah.
Yeah, the General. I love that show.
So speaking of the General, go ahead, Doug.
I like this segue. What did you guys think of General Kirby or Colonel Troutman or I mean General Kirby?
Yeah. Of course. He was.
Oh, right. There's another thing. There's a deleted scene. And in the deleted scene is basically General Kirby making all the cop problems go away. And that's almost the exact scene that Troutman has with Teasel.
Mm.
You know, it's like, hey, you have to get out of this guy's way because this is a commando. He's highly trained. He's the most gifted guy I've ever met. He's on a mission. That's basically the scene. And so obviously they at some point had some kind of self-reflection and said, you know, maybe we shouldn't have that scene in there.
It's a little bit too on the nose. It sounds
too much like First Blood, for one. It's already on the nose. And two, we don't really need it.
No, that's fair.
Some of Troutman's lines would have fit seamlessly into this movie, like the body bags line.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, like it's a very, you know, familiar character.
It's Joel Silver telling us, the producer Joel Silver telling us, look, Rambo is ridiculous. Look, we just made another Rambo. We can make 20 of these Rambos. There's nothing special about that movie. Watch my movies.
You're trying to get a rise out of me, and it's not going to happen.
Yes, I am.
It's not going to happen.
Hey, see, well, Ryan's become resistant to your trolling.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, I don't care about anyone's fandom. You can like whatever you want. It doesn't bother me. Like, Commando... Maybe there's a reason why we don't have a Commando sequel. You could argue, well, it's a perfect film, but stands on its own.
But didn't watch one.
Well, that's just it because, yeah, you could tell that the end, there was like almost like the discussion between the General and John Matrix about, you know, further adventures will continue. And John Matrix is like, no, I'm serious. There will be no further adventures. So I will
no
give.
Chance.
Yeah, so actually I will give credit, you know, to Arnold, absolutely, where. He said this is the last one, and this film, this storyline does work for a standalone film. I think it's fine for that. I think my biggest criticism again is just had they gone the direction, the tone of Predator and the tone of First Blood. I personally, just me as a moviegoer, I think I just would have enjoyed it more. That's all. I mean, if people like a little bit of light parody type film, then this works on that level. So I would say objectively, I can watch and say, okay. If I were to watch this again, knowing that was sort of their intent, I guess I didn't know that. I actually didn't. It's been probably 15 years, honestly, at least 15 years since I'd last seen this film. Like
it's a good thing we asked you to come on the show.
Sure, I love watching
it. Watch that movie often.
I didn't hate it. Like, I want to be clear on something because people think I'm always that voice, and I do it on my show all the time. Doug knows this. It's I'll come at an angle. I won't say critical is the right angle, but if we just like if every episode of every podcast I ever did was just saying this is amazing, this is great. I know you even do it on your show, of course, too, Seiko, regarding Mel Gibson and what have you. You have to criticize where you feel or one feels it needs to be looked at. So I think I came into this. I honestly had forgotten. I think that's what it was. I was. Turned off. Maybe I wasn't in the mood for a comedy. I don't know what it is. Yeah, maybe that's what it, honestly, because I had forgotten how quote unquote lighthearted or parody or the me Hulk moments. I've forgotten all those beats. And so when I watched it, I said, oh, this is all kind of silly. And I didn't realize it was supposed to be. So I think if I were to watch it like right now again, let's say, I would probably enjoy it more because I'm not shocked now that it's. You know, does that make sense? So this is just a fresh viewing response that I saw this for the first time in 15 years. At least I'd forgotten a lot of the action sequences other than the memorable lines that we hear all the time. I've forgotten certain sequences. And so I even forgot about the Ray Don Chong character. Like, I'd forgotten she was in. If you were to ask me a week ago, who is his sidekick? I'd be like, huh? I forgot she existed. I don't remember her being in the film. So that's how long it's been. So when she came on screen and did her parts, I admit that's where I was like, oh, I'd forgotten a lot more than I thought. And the parts that I've forgotten, I didn't enjoy. So that's probably what threw me off.
Ah.
Yeah.
See, at least you can, you know, at least you can have a discussion and say, you know, maybe if I saw it through different lenses, you know, I would have a different opinion of it.
And I think, well, it goes for almost anything. If you don't hear, if you think of a band, let's say, like, I gotta show you my favorite band, da, 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 and you're not ready to hear death metal, you might be thrown off by it. But if somebody says, hey, just so you know, there's going to be screaming, there's going to be growling, or whatever it might be, whatever band, or this, or my favorite pop artist, like, you have to be prepared to hear, oh, this is the sound I'm going to hear. Okay, I'm ready. I understand that sound. So I'd forgot what this movie sounded like. And so when I went in with, and I admit right now I'm doing First Blood, so just a bit of a behind the curtain. So I am reviewing First Blood on my Rambo podcast. And so my mind right now is kind of fixated on a seriousness. It doesn't mean everything I watched like that. But so my mind was kind of like, I'm reviewing a serious film, so to speak. So when I saw this, like, oh, this is more parody than I anticipated. So it just threw me off.
Yeah, but that's the difference, I think, to an extent, between Stallone and Schwarzenegger, is that when Stallone attempts comedy, he more often than not fails. When Arnold attempts comedy, he more often than not succeeds.
Absolutely.
And you know, this movie is more akin to Twins or Kindergarten Cop than it is the more serious stuff he did, like Predator.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Right? I agree totally. I agree that
Arnold is really funny in many ways. It's not just his quippy dialogue. It's also because he's like that. He's a good straight man. He does a lot with incongruous looks and everything. I just think he's hilarious.
No, he's, you know, for a comedy, as far as action comedy type beats from, you know, Last Action Hero, his comedy bits in True Lies. Arnold has a if you're going to compare comedy beats, yeah, I don't think we've ever said on our, Doug, you and I don't think we've ever said on our show that Sly's funny.
No, but
Sly,
and he also thinks he can sing.
Yeah. So those are definitely, if you want to talk about the criticisms regarding that angle, I this is a Pepsi Coke situation again, where Sly's not very good at comedy on film, other than the Rocky character comedy. You know, that's a different kind of comedy, that silly kind of, not silly, but innocent, adorable type humor. But regarding like Oscar or Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, of course, those are horrible films, not well executed comedies.
Ironically, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot was a script originally offered to Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger said, no, thank you.
Yeah.
And then immediately suggested it to Stallone, saying, hey, you should really do this. They offered it to me, but I didn't really have time. And so Stallone immediately, feeling the rivalry, snapped it up. Yeah. And downward spiral to direct a video began for him.
So
people like Arnold so much is because Arnold's as big a troll as Seiko is.
Yeah. Yes. Well, here's the thing. I love Arnold and I love Sly. And I'm one of those fans for both, where I recognize both their weaknesses and strengths, and I enjoy both their weaknesses and strengths. So, for example, Sly's a better creator, better storyteller, better director. Arnold hasn't even bothered because he's just not in the system to write a story, create a character, direct a film. That's fine. That's not his wheelhouse. That's fine. And so they both have played to their strength and both have financially benefited from their strengths. Mm-hmm. So I will argue, at the end of the day, I think if you were to have the ultimate winner, maybe you could say it was Sly, just because of the success with the Rocky character and longevity. Like, you got Sly starring in a coming up Paramount Plus Taylor Sheridan created film, a series called The Tulsa King. And I love Arnold, but I don't know if he – because of his big size, I don't think
he's filming a Netflix show.
Yes, I find it funny that he's doing it right after the Paramount Plus.
And still included in the Terminator franchise. Even if he doesn't actually play in it, they just bring him in as CGI because the T-1000 is indelible to that franchise. Yeah. So
both both camps would say at the end of the day, they both have legacies that will never be.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll be repeated. I don't think they'll be repeated. They'll never be repeated. Say it again.
That's what mostly this podcast is about. Arnold's chasing Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger is chasing Stallone. He's chasing him throughout the 80s.
Right.
And Arnold needs that kind of competition. He needs someone.
Oh, I see what you're saying. They're kind of like the dog chasing the rabbit around the track type thing.
Yes, definitely.
And I like that. You know why? Because I think
there would have been Arnold Schwarzenegger without Sylvester Stallone.
I like that. No, these two are great for that reason, because I think with that competition, well, you could argue any healthy competition, you become stronger for it, right? Yeah. And we've got some incredible films from Arnold that I wonder if we ever would have gotten these films that had the one not existed with the other, you know, if that makes sense.
We
get better films from both people at some point because of the competition. I like that.
And I don't think there would have been an Expendables if there wouldn't have been a Stallone-Schwarzenegger rivalry, because bringing in Governor Schwarzenegger in Expendables was huge.
Oh, it's huge.
It was the moment all of us had been waiting for decades.
Right.
It was a very important moment for us. Chuck Norris coming into the franchise is cute, but it's not Arnold. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It had a gravitas. Matrix needs to go shopping, and that's my favorite scene. Matrix goes to an army dump and he just drives a truck through it and he just takes whatever he wants. Fortunately, Cindy is along, so she can dump all that stuff in the car around back, and Arnold gets arrested.
Yeah, I forgot about the sequence. When he got arrested, this is what I mean, it had been so long that when he got arrested, mm-hmm. I was like, that's weird. I was not expecting that. How is he going to get out of this mess?
And it's out of the blue. It's out of nowhere. It's like, here we have yet another setback.
She's completely on board, too. She's just piling the stuff. She even uses the rocket launcher to free him.
Well, can we talk about that?
She basically goes from grand larceny. Now, first she obstructed justice by bumping that police officer. That's also assault, right? And then she went to grand larceny because she's basically his accomplice. And then it's terrorism. Because she blew up a police truck with a rocket launcher.
Talk about... That's a very, well, obviously risky move, but think about it. She's literally shooting a rocket launcher at a police vehicle. These guys are just two innocent police guys. They've got families at home. They're not involved with this political intrigue. They're just two cops doing their job, taking this guy to the station. How does she know she wouldn't kill them? How would she know she wouldn't kill everyone?
Right before she fired that thing, they thought, oh, look at that. She's a hooker and she's going to take her shirt off and show us something nice. And here she comes up with a – she's just – the bitch is insane.
That's what I mean. So, again, this is where I'm like, okay, this is the parody. I get it. Like, you can blow up a police vehicle strategically enough to free the prisoner without killing the cops. Like, that's a trick shot. Good for her.
After firing one rocket behind her the wrong way.
Yeah, the poor store owner.
Because she was holding the rocket launcher the wrong way. Yeah.
Yes, and that's the funny part was that the stunt people actually basically staged an intervention and said, look, a flight attendant is not going to know how a rocket launcher works.
You think?
So they just said, okay, well, we'll just let her make a mistake first, and we'll make Arnold ask, how did you learn how to do that? And she will answer with, I read the instructions.
I like, though, that when later on in the movie, Arnold uses two rockets, accounting for the two rockets that she had already fired.
Yes, because he only had one load.
Yeah. Yep.
Great continuity.
It's the details, Ryan.
It's all in the details. Wow. So next up is they go to that warehouse where Arnold conveniently finds the map where he can just sort of summarize where Arius probably is. And they also conveniently find an invoice for fuel for a plane that conveniently is in a harbor somewhere. And so they just drive there and then they fly off after a shootout, of course.
Why did she know how to fly a plane?
She was taking her pilot's license.
Oh, I missed that part. Okay.
Yes, and she keeps saying that too. It's like, yes, no, I can't fly this thing. It's the canoe with wings. And she's like, I'm only trained on the Cessna. The Cessna is actually a beginner's plane. That's a one-seater.
Right. Yeah.
Where you learn basic flight.
She made a comment about how none of the controls were LED readouts, I think. They're all dial controls.
They're old-fashioned.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's a classic plane.
One of the questions that I have was the commercial flight to where they were going was 11 hours, mm-hmm. right? But somehow, with the pontoon plane, they get there in two?
Hey, come on. Yeah. Don't figure this out, folks. Come on.
Oh, okay.
No, but they're not going to Valverde. They're going to an island.
Yeah, they're going to a different hideout. They're going to the bad guy's hideout.
And the island is off the coast, and it's near Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. He was going to Valverde.
Arias to launch his invasion into Valverde.
Yeah, pay attention, Duck. Even I knew that. Come on, pay attention.
It does help if you've seen this movie 300 times like I have and know every line. So.
Yeah, I just assumed that Arias was on Valverde with
I have an answer for everything.
Him fudging around with the map wouldn't have made any sense. So, yeah, good call. Thanks for...
What's next on the docket?
Well, Bill Paxton.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Which is another cool scene.
So this is interesting. So Bill Paxton, of course, was in Terminator with Arnold. He was in this movie with Arnold. Then, of course, he was in True Lies with Arnold. Am I missing one?
No, I think those are the three.
I just find it interesting that he did these, like, was it just happenstance? Or when it came to True Lies, did Arnold say, hey, remember, let's bring Bill on?
Terminator and True Lies are both Cameron movies. And he's he's in almost every one of Cameron's movies.
So it's a Cameron connection more than
he's also in Aliens.
Yeah,
right?
He's in Aliens. Yeah.
So,
game over, man. Game over. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They were filming Weird Science. Hey. There are actually other cast members of Weird Science that are also in this movie. They were just available. So they needed the guy. There was Bill Paxton.
Rest in peace, Bill. Man, what a loss.
Yeah. Awesome actor. I love that guy. Okay, so they're out of the warehouse. They're almost to the island. And when they get to the island, Cindy's job is now calling General Franklin Kirby and just keep repeating Commando, Kirby, Code Red, and the coordinates. So, you know, the cavalry will come to the rescue. And meanwhile, Arnold infiltrates the island, gears up. This is actually the part where he was actually injured. He shoves that knife down. I don't know how he did it, but he actually cut his hand and he needed stitches.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
Ironically, he was more injured in the filming of the film than actually this character in the film.
Yes, and they have that cool knife fight.
Which I thought was good. I thought that was a fun...
it was a better ending than they had originally planned, I think, because they ran out of money.
Speedboat chase thing? That's kind
of... Yeah. What happened was they ran out of money. They spent so much money on all the quips and explosions and blowing buildings up. And at the last minute, the location they had for shooting the end sequence where he basically destroys Ares' military, their permits were pulled. So they had to find another place. So you have to move the whole kit and caboodle somewhere else. And they ended up in Randallhurst's property. So they cut the boat chase scene. And they don't have a fight actually on the beach. They were supposed to have hand-to-hand on the beach. So they turned that into the boiler room, which was the on the movie lot. So it was cheap, i.e. free. And they turned it into a knife fight. So basically that boiler room is real. And the fire is real. And that's where both actors actually got like bumped, bruised, cut, and injured. Because that place had no give. It was like... In wrestling, it was like a cage match.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those situations where not having the proper budget, kind of like the early Rocky films, you know, where not having the budget you want actually benefits your storytelling.
It works out better.
Yeah, like I like they didn't have a boat chase. This is the hand to hand is a way better ending.
Yeah,
I like the hand to hand, but I would have liked to see it on a beach, a close quarters, like fights like that. Always kind of make me feel claustrophobic. I don't know. Like I don't feel like if you have like a really close quarter fight, I don't feel like the punches can really have like their full effect, or the, you know, I mean, I guess you can use your environment more than you would be able to on a beach, but I don't know. I don't particularly like close quarter, you know, fights like that in movies.
Okay, so the part where Arnold rips the pipe out of the wall,
right,
and throws it into Bennett as Bennett tries to shoot him, as a kind of a quick draw kind of situation. Arnold is faster at ripping off a metal pipe than Bennett is at cocking his Uzi. And then he, of course, throws it into his chest, and he throws it so hard that the pipe completely goes through his chest and into the gas container behind it, so steam comes out of the valve.
Right.
That's where Arnold can say his famous line, "Let off some steam, Bennett."
Right.
They improvised that completely. I think they tried like 5 or 6 lines to see which one would work best. So that's kind of fun.
I love how go ahead, Doug.
I was just going to say, that's one of Arnold's more memorable one-liner quips.
Yeah, and so they tried a bunch. They said, "I hit small talk," or "I think that was too much pressure for you, Bennett," or "Can't take the pressure, Bennett, huh?" So they finally ended on "Let off some steam, Bennett."
Well, I thought it was interesting that Bennett got electrocuted first, which is that they did that so much in the 80s, like this electrocute, yeah, like these big fuse box electrical circuses, yeah, lying around everywhere that people would get thrown into. So the fact that Bennett, I love how Bennett does it. He's wearing a chainmail outfit, and that doesn't take him out. Like, that's, you would have figured that chainmail would have conducted enough electricity to stop his heart, but no, he keeps going after that big electric shock, which just shows you the power and the insanity of Bennett.
His reactions to even when he's punching and wrestling and stuff, he has like this scream that he does when he was doing it.
Yeah, a snarly little scream.
Yeah, yeah. It cracked me up.
And the electrocution actually woke him up, because he was getting punched by Matrix, and then he gets shocked, and then he comes back and starts beating up Matrix. And at some point, you actually think, "Ooh, Matrix is actually a little bit of trouble here."
Sure. I was worried.
Yeah. I have to admit that when he was like hit by the metal pipe, right? Arnold rips off the door to the furnace and tries to deflect the hits with the pipe. When he hits him on his back with the pipe, that really looked nasty to me.
Yeah, it was a fight. There was the highlight of the film for me was the end fight with the Bennett versus Matrix fight. It was good for 85, hand to hand, the hitting, and Jenny on the top there looking down at her poor father getting beaten to a pulp. It was actually for an action sequence back then, which wasn't common for these films to have this hand to hand. Often would be a shootout. Or
Rambo had his wrestling in the back of the helicopter with the Sergeant Yushin, who electrocuted him. There was also an electrocution in Rambo.
Yeah, in part 2, is that what you're referring to? Yeah, yeah, okay. One of the best sequences.
Those movies are back to back, so you can really compare the two, and it's like electrocutions in both of them.
Yeah, but that Tango was the Rambo getting electrocuted, which is a great sequence. Don't get me started, I'm going to nerd out on that sequence. But
Tango and Cash is one of the best electrocution scenes.
Oh my gosh, horrible. They're all,
also one of the best dud grenade scenes ever. So of course John Matrix finds his daughter, and all is right with the world, and he takes her on his arm and he walks on the beach, and General Kirby finally shows up and he asks, "Leave anything for us?" And Arnold just says, just bodies.
That's a good line. I like that line.
There's no bad line in the entire movie.
Oh wow, hot take.
In terms of Arnold, there's no bad line. Everything Arnold says is funny. It's great. It's a great one-liner.
He was good.
They wrote it that way for purpose.
He was just great in this film. I mean, again, I was looking at it. I will rehash it over and over, but no, he was just fine. This is a good Arnie vehicle. It's showcasing the future that he was going to give us. This was his first. Yes, minus the Conan films, you're right, and the Terminator film. But this is our first real tap into Arnold, the action hero, the modern-day action hero, with the quips and with the modern-day, like this is modern-day, right? This is not alternate universe. This is not a science fiction film. This is our Yeah, he's got machine guns and he's that type of guy. And then he rolls into the Predator film shortly after. And yeah, this
really sets him up as that guy.
Yeah.
This movie is very important.
Yeah, it's his First Blood, or it's his Rambo First Blood Part 2. This is his first, foray into, hey, I'm part of the Action Hero network to be. And I love it. And like I said, I've seen every Arnold movie that came out. I saw in the theaters too, like started with... Well before T2, but I saw like T2 and True Lie. I was a huge Arnold fan. I enjoy Total Recall. In fact, speaking of Total Recall, really quickly here, because it's an Arnold podcast, I remember when it came out, I was in grade 10. I was 15 years old, and it was rated R. It was a hard R. I remember hearing about this movie, it was a hard R. And
there's no Paul Verhoeven movie without a hard R.
And they were kind of strict back then about not letting kids into, obviously, rated R movies, just randomly let you in. So I bought a ticket for a different film and just walked into the Total Recall film. And
look at you.
Well, I just wanted to see so badly. And I was like, I remember I hid in my seat a little bit with popcorn and in front of my face because I didn't want them to see me in there because they would check. They would actually check your ticket back in the day to see if you belonged.
You didn't want to be busted.
I didn't want to be busted. So, it was so I've always enjoyed Arnold. And I think it's great that you're doing an Arnold podcast, you guys. I look forward to hearing
Ryan. Really so happy to have you, despite your brutal criticism of our hero.
Not the hero, the film. I that's why I want to make it clear that I enjoyed Arnold in this film. I love seeing them shoot weapons. I love seeing him getting all camoed up at the end of the film there. I have no reason why. I have no idea why he bothered putting camouflage on. It didn't do anything, but that's fine. He's fun to watch when he's full on. I wish we almost got more of this. Like, of course, Arnold in the jungle with Predator. We didn't get enough of this type of he. In fact, one of my criticisms, though, he's good at the comedy films like Twins and Kindergarten Cop. I wish he did more of the like in the jungle or just full on type of action films that these ones did. So kudos to him to branch out.
Something we can all agree on. Yeah, he should have done a lot more.
He should have done more. And when he went to become governor, as a fan, I was pissed off. Like, good for you to serve your community and your country that you love so, because he loves America so much. I know, I'm just saying, but as a fan, I was disappointed that, oh, crap, he's not allowed to be in movies for 8 years. That's one of the rules, so you can't do it. So I was actually disappointed that he wasn't going to be in films for those 8 years, and I thought, what a waste. So as a fan, but, whatever. That's what he wanted to do. That's his right, so... I just want to make that clear. I love Arnold. I'm a fan of his, and I think it's great you guys are doing an Arnold podcast. I look forward to hearing all the episodes on Arnold, and
I like that we're handpicking the journey. We're not like with Ryan. We're kind of doing like a really comprehensive Sly podcast, but with you, we're picking just the ones that we enjoy. And what's funny is your list is identical to mine, so there's no issues there, and
let me know right now which one. What, give me an example of one you're not doing. I'm just curious.
Jingle All the Way.
Stay Hungry. We won't be covering Stay Hungry.
Sure. Yeah.
We won't be covering The Villain.
Okay.
Sixth Day. We're not doing The Sixth Day, right?
No, we are not doing The Sixth Day ever. I am not talking about that.
I only ask because those are ones that in the future I could cover on the last of the Action Hero feed, so to speak. Like this, I was just curious because I don't mind doing the schlocky ones.
You are very welcome to cover The Villain.
Well, this has been fun. I love these discussions with you guys. So,
I look forward to hearing you guys' show. Don't invite me again. No, I'm just joking. I look forward to it. If you want to have me on, I would love to be on again. But you guys are doing a great. I look forward to hearing you guys your episodes, guys. Awesome.
Yes. Well, thank everybody for contributing, and we'll see you on our next episode.
See you.